I'm Aisling Keenan and you're listening to Every Mum the Podcast, now in its 13th season and supported by Waterwipes, the number one baby wipe brand in Ireland, made with simply two ingredients and nothing else. When I had my daughter, I wanted something I could trust to use on her skin, and Waterwipes were and still are the one. I once made the mistake of trying a different brand and never again. I didn't realise just how much of a difference there could be between two fairly similar brands, but it was huge. My daughter is now almost three, and I still panic if I don't have at least one pack of water wipes within line of sight. With that in mind, I'm happy to say that this season is supported by that most essential of products for every mum, water wipes. Winners of seven National Parenting Product Awards 2023, including Best Baby Wipes and Best Baby Newborn Essential, they are ideal for delicate newborn skin. Together, we are committed to providing more support for parents with trusted products and this podcast. Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Every Mum the Podcast. I am Aisling Keenan, your host, and Kelly Donegan was my guest this week. So if you're a millennial like me, you might know Kelly from a reality TV show that she starred in 12 years ago now called Talifornia. And if you've been following her online, you might have seen her go from reality TV star to fitness expert and now to a mother of one. So her little daughter, Cherry, is just 15 weeks old. But since before she arrived, Kelly's plans for motherhood haven't quite gone off as she'd hoped. So in this episode, we talk about the disappointment that you can feel when your birth plans go the exact opposite way than what you'd hoped, and the challenges so many people go through when it comes to breastfeeding, and what Kelly would do differently if she could go through it all again. It is such an open and honest and brave conversation, which I think is really refreshing, especially given the tendency online to only show the good parts and cover up the tougher times. So I hope you enjoy it. Kelly Donegan, thank you so much for joining me on Every Mum the Podcast. I am honoured to have you. And as someone who has known you over the years, having first seen you on Talifornia, that iconic piece of television, I have watched you transform, if you don't mind me saying that, like over the course of time. And it's lovely. And it's now you're a mother, which is a whole different transformation. So thank you so much for joining us and like chatting to us about parenting and motherhood and how everything is going.
My pleasure. And thank you so much for the lovely intro. I think anybody that has followed me will probably say that I never stick to one thing. And I suppose over the course of the last kind of 10 to 12 years, I've kind of dipped my toe into a lot of different avenues. But that's just the person that I am, you know, and I suppose a lot of people didn't expect me to have a baby. And that's probably a very Kelly thing to do, you know. The thing that I expected is the thing that I am going to do. So here I am, mother, 15 weeks in, and stories to tell.
Oh my God, I can only imagine. And you know what? I've just realized it's the cutest thing ever. So Kelly's little daughter, little girl, is called Cherry, and you're wearing cherries on your jumper. That is the cutest thing ever.
Do you know what? I have this cardi maybe like 4 years. I always loved cherries. I've never thrown it away because I love it. And I only got my nails done today, but my last set of biabs had little cherries on them.
So cute.
I'm going to be one of those weird stage moms, maybe, you know, that's like covered in cherries head to toe.
Well, look, I'm sure at some point she'll step in and be like, "Mom, please.
Cool it off, please."
Yeah. So like you said, little Cherry is only 15 weeks old and you're kind of new to the whole mom thing. But I know from, like, aside from the whole that you know, maybe it was unexpected that you might have a baby, for people who might have watched you from afar on Instagram and stuff, which as we know is not real life, but look, people who were looking at you mightn't have thought that having a baby was going to be a natural step. How has it been for you? Like, how have you adapted? Because
I'm not gonna lie, I struggled. I struggled during pregnancy and I struggled in those first kind of 12 weeks, I would say. So how has it been for you, honestly?
Oh, there's so much to unpack even with that question. And I'm actually so glad we're doing this interview now because it's really given me time over the last week or two since you asked me to, I suppose, go back and relive the pregnancy, the birth, because at the moment, 15 weeks in, you're just taking every day as it comes. You know, the first couple of weeks are chaotic and crazy, and it's nice to just have an opportunity or a reason to kind of go back and say, you know, how are things? How did things go? I don't know, where do you want me to start? Do you want me to start with the pregnancy, the birth? How am I today?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'd love to know how you got on during pregnancy. Because it seemed like you really enjoyed it and you were really embracing your bump and you were really like loving it. But I know because certainly from my perspective, like Instagram is never reality. And like there's always another part of the story. And I had a terrible pregnancy and hated every minute of it, but I didn't necessarily talk about that online because I didn't want other mothers or other people who are pregnant to feel that they, you know, whatever. I didn't want to impact anyone else's process or journey or whatever. So yeah, how was pregnancy for you?
So pregnancy, it's funny now, I would say I loved pregnancy. I'm a very body positive person. I loved being pregnant in terms of having the bump, showing it off. But in reality, it was very, very hard. In different parts, like the first part of pregnancy, I'd say the first 12 weeks, I was really, really sick, constantly vomiting, couldn't keep food down, couldn't keep water down. And at the time, the hospital was really busy. So I don't think I got my first appointment with the hospital till like week 16.
God.
And on reflection and speaking to kind of friends and family, and then my doctor at that later point is, I think I had that condition. I can't even remember what the name of it is. Joy's a baby,
Fibrosis.
yes. But on reflection, I definitely did because I couldn't even keep water down. I couldn't go to work. I had to be beside a bathroom. I was so ill. So that was kind of the initial phases of pregnancy. It's like what you see in the movie, you know, head down the toilet. That was me. I was losing a lot of weight, which you kind of think is going to be the opposite, that you're kind of putting on healthy weight, your bump is no. The good news is that it did start to settle, and kind of that second into the third trimester, I started to really, really enjoy it. I
Okay.
felt really healthy, really fit, no issues with swelling. But then, as the pregnancy progressed into the last kind of trimester, I started getting severe heartburn, night and day, 24/7. And I'm one of these people that has these, like, you know, perfect visions of how things are going to go. And, you know, I never thought I'd be plowing the heartburn tablets into me. You know, I was like, give me the heartburn tablets here, there, and everywhere. Give them to me. Yeah, it was intense.
And
I
did you
suppose.
have, sorry, I was going to say, did you have a birth plan?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me this because I have big opinion plans. And the one thing I would say is, I suppose, you know, I don't really, I'm not a big social media person. I'm not an influencer. I just have a small following from being on TV 12 years ago, and I'm so grateful to have those people still follow me. And I think it's so important to use the voice that you do have, I suppose, to help people and to give people truths and realities. And in tone with the birth plan, I've been saying to people, don't do a birth plan. They're useless. They're crap. They're going to lead you down a path of disappointment. So on reflection, don't do one, because I subconsciously did when I said that I didn't have a birth plan. You know, I didn't sit down and write a birth plan. This is what I want. Subconsciously, I had a birth plan. You know, I wanted no medication. I wanted a natural vaginal birth. I wanted to labor at home as long as possible. At one point, I did actually want a home birth as well, which I explored, and I wanted to breastfeed. Never penned it down to paper, but in my mind, that's what I wanted. What a crock of shit. Don't make a birth plan. What women do is inform themselves. And I think that that's, you know, where women go wrong. I'm going to make a birth plan, whereas it should be, do I have all the information available to me with regards to everything that could happen so that when I go into hospital, I know what to expect. I know what I can challenge the doctors on, the nurses on, you know, and I can push back and say, you know, what are my options? Mm-hmm. Because for me, you know, I did all the courses that pertained to my perfect birth plan, didn't do the other things. Like, I feel like I'm talking a million miles an hour, but I have so much.
No.
You know, I did all the birth dynamics courses for natural birthing, completely skipped over C-section. Nope, that's not going to be me. And it was. What a fill. What a fill. So if I could say anything to other mothers, don't make a birth plan. Inform yourself. Be equipped. Be ready for anything that could happen. You know, it is your body, so you want to have all that information and that power so that you're going into the hospital feeling strong. Because I think when you're in pain and you're in labor, you're terrified. And it's so easy to kind of, like for me, you know, I had a birth plan, and from a week before I had the baby, things were already starting to unravel, you know, and that's a lot of negative emotion, you know, at such an exciting time. So there you go. That's my opinion on birth plans.
I kind of had one as well. Like you, it wasn't something that I typed up and handed to my consultant or anything like that, but I did in my head think, okay, I would like to have a vaginal delivery if I possibly can, and I would like, you know, but I knew at the same time anything could happen. I was kind of aware of that, but I definitely think, like, there's friends of mine that made very specific birth plans. Like, they, you know, they wanted certain lighting, or they wanted certain music playing, or they, you know, they had done hypnobirthing classes, and they wanted to try, you know, breathe through the pain and all that kind of stuff and use their hypnobirthing skills. And like all those things, I mean, I did hypnobirthing classes myself, and I had all that kind of knowledge, and I was prepared if the birth did go that way, but it didn't. And I think because I was aware that anything could happen, I wasn't disappointed. But I know that you're so right. Like, if you have some vision in your head of how things happen and it doesn't happen that way, you're kind of starting yourself out on the journey of being a parent and becoming a mother with a little bit of disappointment.
Yeah, and being, again, completely transparent, I definitely have the ability to suffer with negative thoughts. I can let negative thoughts creep in, and it's something that I have to really carefully manage. Mm. I set these idealistic expectations. Like, I take on these big challenges in life, and I kind of put a great amount of energy into them, you know, and then when things don't work out, you know, the negative thoughts creep in, like, oh, great, another thing that didn't work out, or, you know, this person, they got their birth plan the way they wanted it. I didn't, poor me. And I just have to be so careful, because I can get those kind of thoughts. And you know, when you're about to have a baby, or, you know, when you're in the midst of having a baby, that's not helpful at all. So, no. You know, if you are a perfectionist, you know, and you do kind of struggle with negative thoughts, I think don't go in with a birth plan, because anything could happen. You might have your hopes. Just inform yourself, you know, because I regret not doing that. You know, I learned so much about the things that I hoped would happen, but they didn't, you know, so I'm learning all about, like, what could happen in a vaginal birth. You know, okay, you might need an episiotomy potentially, you know, this will be the aftercare. This is what's going to happen, you know, postpartum. Never looked into a section or an emergency section. So, you know, I'm going home and I have all this knowledge about, you know, things that were not applicable, you know?
Yeah. So, and, you know, like, when it comes to, you know, things like when you're pregnant, no one wants to tell you the negative things. And I always try and steer clear of giving people, like, telling people negative stories if I can, especially when they're pregnant, because it's such a sensitive time, and you know, you're so susceptible to listening to things and taking things on. But at the same time, I always say I wish someone had given me a bit more warning about the hormonal aftermath of the birth. So you and I both had sections, so we didn't go through that natural vaginal delivery process say, where your body kind of clocks that it's about to deliver a baby and it starts releasing all these different hormones. And so after, like, I didn't have, you know, I heard about that day three thing, you know, where you're supposed to have a big flood of hormones, but it happened to me. This is the weird thing. It happened to me day one, and then it continued until about day 18, and I wasn't prepared for that at all. So, kind of from a hormonal, emotional perspective, where did you find yourself immediately after having her?
I was in a state of shock, because again, this is not the negative thoughts. This is just the reality that, you know, in terms of how a pregnancy could go, you know, a lot of things didn't go to plan. Obviously, I had a gorgeous, beautiful, amazing baby at the end. So, you know, everything worked out exactly how you would want it in terms of the finish line. But there was definitely a lot of challenges. So, you know, at the end of it, I just felt a shell of myself. I was in shock. I'm not saying this lightly, but I definitely think that I experienced a trauma, and I'm probably going to have to revisit that and kind of look at that in a more in-depth way, because I just found the whole thing shocking. And I've talked a lot about it on social media as well. I think a lot of people were really taken back by how honest I was, because I was plainly, like, just transparently negative. It's crap. It's shit. It's hard. When does it get easy? I haven't slept. Breastfeeding isn't going well. The birth was horrific. And I think a lot of people were really taken back, because most people talk about pregnancy in such a positive way. Mm. I don't know why that is. Maybe for fear of, like, judgment. Oh, people are going to think that I, you know, I don't love my baby, or I'm not grateful. I was grateful. I loved my baby, but it was horrible. The first few weeks were horrible. Mm. And I was just a shell of myself. Like, I would say the second that baby came out, I was no longer the same person I was prior. Mm-hmm. That's how I felt. The day I got home, I think I had like a sensory overload. Like, I remember looking around the house and looking at a plant like I'd never seen a plant before. Looking at, you know, the kettle like I'd never seen a kettle before. Like my brain had been wiped. That's how traumatic I found it. People are going to think I sound like such a drama queen.
No, not at all. And I, to be fair, I kind of feel the same way. And in a way, like, my trauma, I suppose, came from the pregnancy rather than the delivery. So my pregnancy was awful and I was so unwell, and I had preeclampsia, and it was terrible. But at the same time, like, and even though my birth was fine, I still did feel traumatized afterwards. And I know what you're saying about things feeling different and you feeling different. Like, I didn't feel like myself at all. And, like, not to be, you know, scary about it, but, like, it took me probably 2 years to get back to really, you know, feeling, okay, I recognize her again, you know. So I'm not surprised that after a few weeks you were still, like, a shell. And the birth itself, so you said you had an emergency cesarean section. Did you go into labor spontaneously, or how did it all kind of transpire?
Such a fun story to relive, but I'm so glad I'm here doing it, because it's so you know, people say that, you know, you'll forget and then you'll want to have your second. I didn't believe them, and now that I'm reliving, I'm thinking, oh yeah, I forgot how bad that was. So I suppose, where do we begin? Maybe 2 weeks before I had the baby, and we were getting close to the due date, you know, and then there was kind of conversation about, you know, an induction. And straight away, again, in tone with my birth plan that I didn't make, that I did make, no, do not want an induction. I'm going naturally. No way. So straight away, my walls went up. I do not want an induction. I'm going naturally. So then it was a week before I had my week checkup, and the week prior checkup, same thing again. They were like, oh, look, you know, we don't like to let people go over more than 7 days. And for me, that was a bit of a shock, because, you know, I've had friends that went over 14 days, 10 days. So straight away, I was thinking, well, you know, I've heard different information. You know, is that because of the hospital schedule? You know, but I don't, like, is my baby healthy? I'm healthy. Why should I need an induction? Mm-hmm. So there was already a little bit of discord there between, let's say, me and the hospital. I had a couple of negative experiences. Now, I've had loads of positive experience as well, but, you know, the walls were coming up, things were starting to unravel a little bit, but I was feeling quite good, except for the heartburn Then I went in on my due date. My appointment just happened to fall on my due date. And then I felt real pressure to get an induction. Okay. And the same thing again, I really dug my heels in. Don't want an induction. I'm healthy. Is the baby healthy? They said yes. So I really tried to push them for as long as I could. I wanted to go naturally. So they let me go another week.
Okay.
So we're a week over now, 7 days. And then the hospital were really like, okay, you know, we're 7 days over here. What's the plan? They I think this was on a Friday, and they were kind of saying, tomorrow, come in, let's get an induction. And I said, no, no way. And I felt like I really needed to kind of assert some sense of control over myself, even at that early point. Because I've just heard, this is the danger of social media, you know, you're watching all these things and people are saying, you know, really, you know, don't be afraid to say no and push back. And, you know, most people should be able to go naturally, blah, 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 blah. So I think that that may have actually impacted how I went into kind of my labor, etc. So I would say, no, what's the latest, you'll let me go. And they agreed to let me go to the Wednesday, which was, I think that would have been 10 days over or whatever. So I went home and praying that I would go naturally. Please God, it's going to start happening before Wednesday. I have a few days. So I was on my bouncy ball. I was eating the curry. I was eating the dates. I was eating the pineapples. I was out walking. I was doing loads of squats. This baby needs to come out. She was very happy. She was very toasty. I loved having her in there. Loved the bump. So I wasn't in a rush, you know. And I really, if they had let me go 3-4 weeks, I probably would have. Yeah. But I know there's like risks and whatever. So anyway, we agreed to the Wednesday, and I went home. And on the Saturday, things were starting to happen. Very slight kind of period pains, very manageable. But I was like, ooh, something's happening here. Mm-hmm. I kind of knew it was coming, you know, but I didn't know when. And again, in tone with my birth plan that I did make, I would stay at home as long as possible. I wanted to labor right up until like the last minute. Right. So I wanted to stay at home as long as possible. So I was like, well, I'm in early labor, you know, have the showers, the relaxation. My friend gave me a TENS machine, doing all the lovely things. But I knew it was happening. It was coming. Went to bed the Saturday night, you know, some contractions, but manageable. Woke up on Sunday and I said, this is happening. I still knew I was kind of in early labor because the contractions weren't kind of close together and they were manageable. I actually went for lunch with my mom in labor. I was sitting there having a lunch. I was, woo! But I was just trying to keep myself busy in tone with the birth plan, you know, try and stay at home as long as possible. And then Sunday night came and, wow, you know, it was on, in my opinion. Couldn't sleep, couldn't get comfortable. I really thought that I was like, okay, Monday's coming and it's all happening. And so Monday came, and I'm trying to go back now in time. Woke up quite early. In my opinion, I was definitely in active labor, felt strong contractions. I wouldn't say I was struggling, but, you know, they were very noticeable. Mm-hmm. But I was excited. Like, I was really excited about giving birth. And I was one of those people that really wanted to feel all the pains and the feelings. And I would have thought that I was quite good with pain. So I was really in the mindset of bring it on, bring on the pain. I'm ready for it. I love a physical challenge. And I was trying to distract myself. So I was actually watching One Born Every Minute while I was in labor. I had been watching it all through my pregnancy, and I think I had something like 5 episodes left of 5 seasons. So I was like, I might as well watch them today. So trying to distract myself on my ball, but it was very noticeable. So I called the cum after my partner and my mom were kind of putting me under a bit of pressure, not negative pressure, but, you know, look, I think you should go in. It's probably going to happen. You don't get that out. So I went in, and they bring you into the admissions section, and two of the loveliest nurses ever were there to greet me, did an internal, you know, were just really warm and I felt really safe. But then the kicker came when they said, ooh, you're probably maybe 1 centimeter, you're nowhere near. you're nowhere near. And I was like, so like a bell went off, and I was thinking to myself, how much worse is this going to get? And yeah, when is this going? So then I think I got quite scared, because what I thought in terms of pain changed in that moment, you know, in terms of my expectation. Mm-hmm. So they sent me home, and I went home, continued doing all the bits, but it was ramping up. I was struggling, really, really struggling. I couldn't sit down. The pains were like from my toes to my head, like just rushes. So I was thinking, maybe I'm progressing quite quickly here, and I should be careful. So I called the coom. They said, come back in. So this is Monday. Doing another internal. My two lovely nurse friends were there. And same thing again, 1 centimeter.
Oh my God.
I was horrified. I was horrified. So in my head, I'm thinking, right, Saturday, Sunday, we're into Monday. And I didn't sleep the previous night, and I do not do well without sleep. I love my 9 hours. I cherish them through my whole pregnancy. I slept 9-10 hours every single night. I know a lot of people would be very jealous of that.
Listen, do you know what? There, if there's one thing that I do well, it is sleep. And I am with you there on 9 hours a night.
I need my sleep. So I was already on edge because I hadn't slept. So basically, they gave me 2 options. You can go home, or you can come in and we can help you manage things from here. We recommend that you stay. Maybe things will kind of ramp up quite quickly. You just don't know how things are going to go. So I agreed to stay. And they brought me to the labor ward. I was in public care. I don't know if semi-private or private is different, but all I can speak of is my public sector experience. So brought to a labor ward, and you're in a labor ward with maybe 6 other women, everybody moaning and groaning. It honestly shocking. What's more shocking is a guy who was in the ward with his partner messaged me after I had my baby on Instagram saying, oh, congratulations, we were in the ward next to you.
Oh my God.
Like, they heard me moaning and groaning. Anyway, we're going off. So I was brought into the labor ward. You know, they're quite small. They're very compact. Everybody's there doing their thing, trying to work through their labor. Another hour goes by, another hour goes by, another hour goes by. No. And I would say at this point, I'm an 8 out of 10 in pain. And I'm getting weary. I'm getting very stressed. Again, because my expectation of the pain was different than what it was actually like.
Yeah.
In tone with being 1 centimeter, I was really scared. I was like, where is this going to go? Like, and I really didn't want pain medication.
Yeah.
But I was my second sleepless night, and I was really, really scared. And the nurse came in and said, look, these are your options. You can take a Panadol drip. You can take Pethidine. And I can't remember what the last option was, but we talked through the different plans, and I decided to go with the Pethidine. And I was devastated because one of the things I didn't want was Pethidine, because they say it crosses the placenta, but it's the strongest pain medication you can take. And I was desperate. So I took it. It's a needle into the thigh, and the good news is it gave me kind of 2 or 3 hours sleep, but then you're woken up straight away back to the same pain.
Yeah, once it wears off.
Once it wears off. So I get another examination, and they're like, oh, you're still about 1 centimeter. Your cervix is very
hard. Oh my God.
You're nowhere near. Just try and work through it. I was scared at that point. And I don't know. It's just, you know, you have this vision of how it's going to go. And I thought I'd be at home, you know, maybe having a birth in a pool, maybe my home birth. But here I am in this tiny little curtained room, a million miles away from having my baby. And, you know, the dream is starting to fade. The hours go by, My partner has to leave. Then I end up taking my last dose of Pethidine. Again, I didn't want Pethidine. And here I am taking my second round and my last round, just to help me get through the night. So we survive. We survive Monday night, and we get into Tuesday. And I'm thinking, today has to be the day. Please let today be the day. Got another examination. You're about 1, maybe 2 centimeters.
Oh,
if you're
God.
And at that point, I was in shock. I was suffering. I was so uncomfortable.
You must have been so exhausted as well. Like, after 4 days of like Saturday, Sunday, Monday into Tuesday. You must have been just fed up.
Mentally, emotionally, physically. Yeah. And anyone that knows me will tell you, I'm a high energy person. I have loads of energy. I'm a Duracell bunny. But I was at zero. I had nothing. Like, I couldn't take any more Pethidine.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to work through it. And I constantly felt like all my organs were going to fall out of my body. And it just didn't feel right. Like, I felt like my baby was coming, but I'm 1 centimeter. So for me, there was just such a disconnect with where I was and the journey. And there was nothing holistic or beautiful about it. And that's what I wanted. I wanted this. I knew it would be painful, but I thought it would be this kind of journey of progress. You know, I'd go from 1 to 2 and it'd be this gradual pain and I'd work through it with all the tools that I'd learned. But none of that was happening. It was very medical. It was very clinical. I was in a lot of pain. Nothing was going to plan. And the only good thing was that I had this lovely nurse and she was just so lovely and just, you know, reassuring. And her and my partner were the people that got me through it, really. And we're coming into kind of late Tuesday and
out of nowhere,
somebody, it wasn't my actual nurse, it was a doctor or nurse, told me, look, your baby's actually posterior. So it means your baby is back to front, sunny side up, as they call it. And it means that the biggest part of the baby's head is pressing on your cervix. And that's apparently one of the most painful births or labors you can go through, because it's the biggest part of the head on your small little cervix.
Yeah.
And from speaking with them, their hope was that the baby was going to gradually turn. So they gave me the advice to go on all fours. But at this point, 4 days in, I had nothing left in the tank. But the crazy thing was, is once I came up on all fours, I went from like a 9 out of 10 pain down to maybe 6 out of 10. And I'm thinking to myself, why did somebody not tell me this 3 days ago?
Yeah, oh my God.
And my sister came to visit in the middle of my labor, and her and my partner were feeding me marshmallows, and that was getting me through, just the sugar. And out of nowhere, my waters break.
Okay.
Right? Something's happening. Praise the Lord. And I wasn't expecting it. So it was such a relief. I really didn't think things were going to happen. And I was worried. I was like, why are they leaving me so long?
Yeah.
So the waters broke, which meant they could put my name down for the list to go up to the delivery ward.
Yeah.
But even that, you hear the word list and you're thinking, list? How many people are ahead of me? They were monitoring the waters, and then they kind of started to turn a slight green, which meant there was a risk of meconium in the water. So they were able to bump me up the list. And within an hour, I was being brought up to the delivery ward. Can you imagine the relief?
Yes, and at this, oh my God.
I know. And at this point, I had already made the decision, I want the epidural, which is just such a contrast from what I wanted. Like, I was absolutely firm. I did not want an epidural. Like, my mom is my absolute hero. She's one of my favorite people in the world. And she had her 3 children naturally. And, you know, I wanted that for myself as well. And I wanted to, you know, feel all the feels. So, like, I had decided in that moment, I'm getting the epidural. I can't cope. I don't have anything left in the tank. How am I going to push a baby when I'm at zero?
Yeah.
So on the way to the delivery ward, we're heading up. We get into the suite. Get the epidural, and I've gone from, you know, a 9 out of 10 pain to a 6 out of 10, and I'm down at a 0. An epidural is unbelievable. The guy did it was amazing. Well, he was so reassuring. It wasn't painful at all. Very comfortable. The pain relief was incredible. Oh my God. I was back feeling like myself. I could talk. I had a renewed sense of confidence that I could do it. I was like, yes, I've got energy. I'm going to push this baby out. This baby is coming. And then I got another internal, and they were like, you're about 2 centimeters.
Oh my God, Kelly, come on.
I know. What is that about? And the nurse said, she said, I don't even know if you really are 2 or 3 centimeters. I think it's probably just been from the amount of internals you've had.
Oh my God.
So she said, look, let's give it another hour. Let's see where we are. We're going to monitor the baby. and we'll see where we are at that point.
Okay.
From there, it ended up being recommended to get an induction. We weren't progressing, things weren't moving. Obviously, there was a risk of meconium as well, so things were kind of on a clock. So I agreed to the induction, another thing I didn't want. And pretty quickly, we knew that the baby wasn't tolerating the induction very well.
Okay.
All the doctors came into the room and said, look, we recommend that you go for an emergency section and we need to go ASAP. And I still held on at that very last moment for some sense of control. And I asked the doctor, what are my other options?
Oh my gosh.
Please tell me there are other options. And she said, the only option we have at this point is to take a sample from the baby. We'll take a needle into the baby and we'll take a blood sample and see, you know, how the baby's oxygen levels are or something along those lines.
Yeah, yeah.
And just to me, that sounded very invasive for the baby. So I'm, no, let's just do the emergency section. But I was deflated. I was gutted. I had gone through all the days of labor, took the Pethidine, took the induction, took the epidural, and here I am with the thing that I really didn't want. My partner wasn't even there. I don't know where he was. So I was calling him. I was like, Alex, quick, we're going for an emergency section. And I'd say within the space of 5-10 minutes, we were in the theater. I was being cut open. And I was just in a state of shock. I don't think I've ever felt as numb or as... I can't even put it into words how I felt. I was just traumatized. And the worst thing is that...
Did Alex make it in? Was he there? He made it in. Okay.
And God bless him. Like, he was terrified for me. Like, he was... Because he knew he wanted a section. And then I ended up having a big hemorrhage. And when the baby was pulled out, she pooed everywhere, all over the place. There was poo everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm going to be really honest. You know, people have that moment where they cry, their baby is there and it's amazing. I felt nothing. I was just shocked. I was like, I just can't believe what has happened to me. Like, yeah. I didn't feel like I was in my own body anymore. You know, and I was just, they passed the baby to me and I was so happy and I was so happy to look at her and that she was fine and healthy. And, you know, for me at the end of the day, that is really all that matters. But I just still felt empty. I was shocked. And I was shaking, you know, my face. Yeah. But as far as I'm aware, that's from the medication.
That's from the medication. Yeah.
I felt that way, you know.
Yeah.
Even if the medication didn't do that to me, I probably would have been shaken anyway.
Mm, yeah.
And that was my birth story.
This podcast is just one way that Every Mum supports you. Another amazing way is our free gift bag, packed full of essentials for you and baby, including free samples of water wipes, the number one baby wipe in Ireland. To receive yours, register now on everymum.ie. There's a free gift bag there waiting for every mum.
Listening to you, especially talking about after she was taken out of you and you've been shaking and feeling empty and just feeling shocked and stuff, that's how I felt. I didn't feel that big emotional rush of love and, you know, oh, happiness and the baby's here and isn't this great and look at, you know. And I remember when she was taken out, they showed her to me over the curtain and I just was like, oh my god, she's perfect, because Lydia looked really, she was really clean. And my consultant said to me that my waters were really clean. And I expected her to come out looking like a, I know, I was very impressed with myself, my clean waters. But I expected her to come out all looking all gooey and disgusting, but she actually didn't. She looked really clean. But I still remember, like, I was shaken from the medication. I was so intimidated. Like, I'm a grown woman. I was 33 when I delivered her. And I was still so intimidated by this surroundings, by all the medical professionals. I was so scared. I didn't know what was happening. And like, don't get me wrong, the doctors and the nurses and my consultant were telling me what was going to happen and they were being really kind to me, and, you know, but it was still so alien. Like, they're in those medical situations day in, day out. It's nothing to them. But for me, it was terrifying and traumatic to an extent. And like, I think I mean, God love you going through 5 days of labor and then to be induced and have to have an emergency section. I can't even imagine. But you're right, it's not the picture perfect moment that you think it might be, you know. And it often, like you said, having an expectation that that's what's going to happen can mean that you feel a little bit hard done by or something. Yeah.
And again, I know I mentioned earlier on about, you know, having negative thoughts and having to be very careful about, you know, where my mind goes. You know, for all of those things to happen to me, you know, in my mind, you know, I couldn't help but have this little self-saboteur saying, you had the labor, but you still had the section. You know, you had all the negatives of having the labor and all the negatives of having the section, you know. Yeah. You know, so you have all the aftercare of the C-section, not being able to get out of bed, the pain, you've got a giant wound, you're completely numb, you can't look after your baby properly for the first day or two.
Yeah.
And then I also had the labor. So, you know, for people that get, you know, an organized section, they don't have any of the pain, it's planned, they mentally prepare.
Yeah.
You know, so that's my little inner saboteur saying, you know, well, you know, you got the bad parts of both. But on reflection, you know, nobody knows what their birth is going to go like, you know, and what's meant to happen is meant to happen, you know. And it was a really difficult thing to go through. But, you know, looking back, all of the hardest things in my life, or all the things that I've gone through in my life, the hardest things were always the things that I grew the most from and the things that were the most special. So to go through that trauma has brought me into this new chapter of my life as a mother, you know, the mother of baby Cherry, and I have her, and, you know, it was worth it.
Yeah.
And that's me trying to bring the positive back into it that, okay, yeah, you went through a trauma. It was very difficult. It didn't go to plan, but that's okay. You had an amazing medical team. The same as you, I was really well instructed in terms of what was going to happen, talked through everything. You know, and what was meant to be was meant to be. And that's my story, and you can't change it. And, you know, and I have Cherry at the end of it. And
I know. You know, that's the thing. Like, you know, you do, and it's not that you forget what you went through, but you kind of think, well, look what I have now. I have my, you know, my daughter in our case. But I'm not going to be that person and ask you what your plans are for future children, because I absolutely hate that question myself. But in terms of that kind of traumatic process that you went through, and you know, the emergency section and the labor and all that kind of stuff, has that impacted how you might have felt about a potential future pregnancy, future birth? Because it definitely impacted me. Like, my pregnancy definitely has impacted how I feel about future pregnancies, because it was always in my plan to have another child if I could, if I was lucky enough. And we haven't even started to try yet, and Lydia's she's be 3 next month, because pregnancy was so difficult for me. And that's being completely honest with you. So has that process that you went through changed your opinion any, or changed how you feel about a second child?
I can honestly say that I'm not thinking about a second child right now, but I didn't want a first child to start with, so
okay, interesting. Tell me more.
Like, I always thought of myself as not having kids, you know, living that really spontaneous, eccentric life and just doing whatever I wanted. And, you know, I never saw myself in that settled, you know, getting a mortgage, you know, having a baby. I never saw that for myself. But, you know, as the years went on, I was like, oh, maybe I would like a little Kelly, just to take on this weird and wacky journey with me. And then it obviously happened, and I'm delighted. And so the fact that I didn't really want a first one, and I have a first one, and I'm just filled with love and joy and admiration for my amazing little baby, makes me think that I probably would have a second. But if you had have asked me leaving the hospital, I would have said never, no way. Because the doctors, they, you know, they do that, I don't know if every hospital is the same, but they do that dispatch kind of conversation, you know, where you kind of go through, you know, do you have any questions about what happened? You know, this is what we did, and this is why we did it. And they always end on, you know, your contraception options leaving the hospital.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm thinking, I'm crazy. I'm never having sex again after what I went through.
Fair. That is excellent contraception.
But you get home and you're in the midst of madness and suffering and poo and crying and no sleep. But then things start to settle and you're in your little love bubble with your baby and your partner and you forget the trauma, you know? So mm-hmm. I can see how it happens to people. Mm-hmm. So who knows?
But you know what though? That is good. I'm glad that it hasn't closed the door to, you know, a potential future child if that's what you decided you wanted. Because I was in my head thinking two children, maybe even a third. Like I kind of was open to that. And yeah. And after the 9 months of hell that was my pregnancy, I'm still not mentally over it. Like it has really changed my long held feeling about, you know, what size family I wanted or how many children I wanted. So it is a good thing that you're still like, who knows, who's to say, and you're open to it.
Yeah, and you know, they do say that every pregnancy is different, every birth True. Is different. You know, I am so close with my brother and sister, like ridiculously close, and I have such an amazing family. We're as thick as thieves. They're my best friends, my whole family, my mom, my dad, they're all incredible. And I just can't imagine Cherry not having, you know, a sibling.
Yeah.
I would be devastated for her, but you don't know. Like, I mean, I'm not a spring chicken. I'm 34 now. So you just don't know. I mean, a lot of people struggle to have kids. I don't know what's on the cards for me. You know, I could decide that it wouldn't happen for us, but I think I would be heartbroken if Cherry didn't have a sister. A raspberry.
Oh my God, yeah, your name options are going to be restricted. It'll have to go with Cherry. You'll have to call your child Watermelon or something. So come here, another thing I wanted to talk to you about is the topic of breastfeeding. So you were, I've seen on Instagram, you were quite vocal about your process and what you went through with it. And I know you found it difficult. So for anyone that's listening, because there's your birth is one thing, and your delivery is one thing, but there's so many challenges that you face in the early weeks, and breastfeeding can be a massive one for people. So talk to us about what you went through and what your hopes and dreams were, say, and then what actually the reality was.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm going into this part of the conversation and it's also very, very negative. So I suppose I just want to say to people that, you know, even though there was a lot of negatives, it was such a journey, and mothership, especially, you know, through the end of pregnancy into labor, the first few weeks, it is really hard and it is a lot of negatives. But, you know, things do turn around, they become more positive and, you know, you become more self-assured. So we'll get to all the positive stuff maybe at the end.
No, but you know, I have to say that, Kelly, as well, like, obviously being a mother is an incredibly special thing, and it's, you know, we're lucky that we have been able to experience it, because like you said, there are so many women who struggle to conceive, there are so many couples who struggle to conceive, whatever, whether it's heterosexual, homosexual, whatever, couples that we're talking about. But like, it is hard, and it's fine to talk about that sometimes, and I think you do have to have those honest conversations, and we're not trying to scare anyone, and we're not trying to make it sound like it's all negative, but it's your experience, and it was my experience, and it's, you know, that has to be allowed. We have to have space for the good and the bad, and some people's experiences are very difficult.
And it shows the resilience of women that, you know, even when you go through something negative, or that, you know, you have a traumatic birth or a really tough first couple of weeks, that you survive, you know, and you can prosper. You know, it's just, you have to get through it. You got to work through it. And, you know, again, I know I'm talking a lot about the negatives, but like on social media, the amount of women who wrote to me saying, thank you. Yeah. I see you. I am so, so, so glad that I follow you right now, because I've never seen anyone be as honest and as transparent. Yeah. How hard it is. And I went through that, and I never saw anybody online talking the way that you talked. I got a bigger response from my man content. And again, I'm not an influencer. I don't do social media. I just enjoy social media. So when I do of doing it, I got overrun with messages from women, more than anything else that I've ever done. The bodybuilding, California, anything I've ever done. I got a bigger response from this. Women just being like, thank you. I went through that. That's how I felt. I felt that negative. And I really appreciate you being as transparent as you have been. So that was really encouraging. And I felt a lot of support. And, you know, I think by being as honest as I was, a lot of women were kind of coming forward and saying, I went through it. Don't give up. You know, and it was a real sense of camaraderie, and it helped me in those first few weeks. Because to get back to your original question, I had a lot of issues with feeding. And the same thing again, I had these plans in my head. I wanted to breastfeed for various reasons. All the health benefits, the bonding. You know, I read a lot in terms of it helping kind of reduce your uterus size quicker. In terms of not having to buy bottles, prepare bottles, it's better for the environment. The list and list is endless of the reasons why I wanted to do it. I'm also not a shy person. I'm very, I'm definitely an exhibitionist, as everybody knows. So getting my boob out to feed my baby would be the least of my worries. So for me, it was a natural fit. You know, I wanted to do that. And I spent a lot of time and energy, did all the breastfeeding courses, read all the breastfeeding books, did not do one thing on formula. So I wanted to breastfeed, was in the hospital, had the emergency section. So naturally your milk doesn't come in. Mm-hmm. I was listening to actually a few of your podcasts, and I know Lorna was the same. She harvested colostrum and I did the same.
Yeah.
So I think from week 37, I was squeezing the bejesus out of my nipples for every drop of that liquid gold. I had my partner helping me, and the two of us, we were milking those jugs, right? And my God, it's very hard in the beginning. So for anyone that wants to do it, the first few times you do it, you won't even get a drop. But the more you stimulate, the more it comes. It became my hobby. It was the most exciting part of my day. And I did it. Seriously. I was milking like there was no tomorrow. And I got a lot. So I think by the end, I had something like maybe like 50 or 60 mils.
Wow, that's a lot of colostrum.
Which is colostrum.
Yeah, yeah.
The hospital armed. I got my milk. You know, I'm ready to go. I'm prepared. So because the colostrum was happening, I never thought that I would have had an issue with my supply. Mm-hmm. Then again, I know I'm repeating myself, had the section so the milk didn't come in, but no issue. I've got my lovely colostrum. Mm-hmm. So was latching the baby. Well, she seemed really sleepy. There wasn't like a lot of active sucking going on, but I had the colostrum. So we were doing all right. But I was... Again, I had done all my research, so I wasn't really too happy with the latch. I didn't see a lot of sucking going on. So for me, I was thinking something's not right here. And I kept asking nurses, how's my latch? Is everything okay? And they just kept saying yes. So I was like, happy days. Mm-hmm. But I did constantly keep saying, you know, I want to see a lactation consultant. Please, can I see a lactation consultant? I really make sure I'm getting this right for when I go home. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get to see one until the last day. And on that point, you know, they do all the weight checks. And I found out that she'd lost more than 10% of her body weight. You know, so all the negative emotions come in. My baby's starving. What am I going to do? I'm going home now and I don't know what I'm doing here. Mm-hmm. Help me. So they let me leave the hospital with a bit of a plan. And the plan was to triple feed. So for anybody listening who doesn't know what triple feeding is basically when you breastfeed. So you breastfeed on the left breast, the right breast. You top them up with a little bit of formula or breast milk if you have it. And then you pump. And you do that through the day. For me, it was like every 2 to 3 hours. So if you imagine, you know, a breastfed baby, they eat regularly. So you might not get 3 hours. It might be 2 hours. It might be 1 hour. But for every bottle that you give the baby, you need to pump to try and establish your supply while you're kind of figuring things out, working on the latch. So if you imagine, I didn't get a lot of time between feeds. So I think first maybe 5 weeks, I was probably sleeping about 3 hours a day, broken.
Oh my God.
I was a shell. So I'm really struggling to get up and down because of the section. I'm trying to figure out this feeding thing. You know, I was working with the lactation consultants, and again, some amazing, amazing women in there. But a lot of the drive was me, you know. Now, they did check in the phone calls, but I didn't have a one-to-one with them until week 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm still pumping. I'm still topping up, you know, and I was struggling. And I was being really transparent online with people, like, you know, I'm finding it really hard, but I'm digging my heels in. The birth didn't go how I wanted, so the breastfeeding has to work out for me. Mm-hmm. And everybody just kept saying, this is normal. The first few weeks are really, really hard. It takes a long time just to figure things out. Just keep going, you know, keep going. And my public health nurse told me about this group, a breastfeeding support group in the area. And I decided to go along, but this wasn't until, I think, week 9. So still triple feeding up to pretty much this point. The baby was gaining very slowly. And as the weeks were going on, there just seemed to be more formula. You know, I was becoming obsessive with the pumping. I had to rent hospital grade pumps from the hospital. You know, they're not cheap either. Like part of the
motor. And were you was the flow, or was the supply, I should say, okay? Like you were able to pump and express milk, I presume.
So I think it was at about week 7 that one of the the breastfeeding consultant said, I think you have a supply issue.
Okay.
I think. And they actually recommended me to go on medication. So I actually was on domperidone, which is basically Motilium. Okay. And I was at 3 times a day, as well as the pumping, the topping up, the breastfeeding. I was trying everything. I can tell you, most people would have said, stuff this, I'm not doing it. And, you know, each to their own. I can understand why people would give up, because it's and to get the support you need, it needs to be driven by you. You don't have any drive, you just had a baby. But I'm so determined, because the birth didn't work out, that, you know, I was calling the lactation consultants, I was taking the medication, and I finally went to this group and I met this amazing lactation consultant called Sarah Glennon. She's incredible. She works for the HSE. She's just a superstar. And she worked really closely with me for 2 weeks. And she said to me, and this was the best thing I heard, she said, look, if you do have a low supply, combination feeding might be your limit. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're working to exclusive breastfeeding, but that might not be for you.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard that yet. So, like, that was, I was so glad she said it to me, because that never even came into my head as kind of a long-term option. Mm-hmm. But I was devastated, because another thing that didn't work out.
I know, and
as a woman, you think, you know, breastfeeding, it should, like, only 5% of women apparently suffer with genuine low supply.
Yeah.
So for me to think, oh, I'm actually in that 5%, again, the next thoughts, poor me.
Yeah.
And she said, look, work with me closely. Let's give it socks for the next 2 weeks. And I said, right, let's do it. And I gave it 150%. And it got me to kind of week, I think I was on about week 10 or 11 at this point, I think. And it turned out I did genuinely have a low supply. I couldn't keep up with the demands. Mm-hmm. Cherry wasn't happy. She was almost, you know, on the breast, was like contorting and becoming stiff, rigid, and crying. And I was stressed. She was stressed. And it just wasn't an enjoyable experience. And, you know, I was forcing it. I was really forcing it, because I wanted it to happen, but it wasn't happening. So I really, again, had to kind of just be really good to myself, because I think when I found out that I did have a low supply, I was heartbroken. And
yeah, of course.
In that initial moment, I felt less of a woman because I couldn't do it. And the great thing is I had an expert there to say, look, there's various reasons, you know. So again, this is me being completely transparent. I had breast augmentation when I was 21. It was under the muscle. So my belief was that shouldn't affect breastfeeding. And that's what I was told.
Yeah.
But I had very, very, very small boobs growing up. I mean, a double A. I had absolutely nothing. So the reality was, you know, the low supply could have been from having, you know, minimal glandular tissue. I know plenty of people have small breasts and they go on to have really successful breastfeeding journeys. Mm-hmm. Was there some kind of minor trauma from the surgery? Mm-hmm. You know, and then obviously we got off to a slow start because I had a hemorrhage, so I lost a lot of blood. I had the C-section. So there was just a lot of factors, but mm-hmm. we just didn't get there. But, you know, to summarize it and bring it to a positive place, we're combination feeding. And I never thought that that was an option, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And to try to be more positive, I have lots of good things from both of them. You know, I have the benefits of the bottle that she sleeps through the night now. Love and life. That's why I love But then we also still get to do a little bit of breastfeeding. You know, we get to have that closeness. I pump mm-hmm. when I feel like it. I'm not pumping 8-9 times a day. Maybe I might do 2 power pumps a day if I feel like it. If I don't, I don't. If my boobs fill up a little bit, I'll stick cherry on. And what I've been saying online is, you know, the formula bottles are the main course and I'm either the snack or the dessert or the starter.
Okay. That's a really good way of putting it.
It's working for us, you know, and I hate doing all the sterilizing and the bottles, but it is what it is. My baby is doing well.
Yeah.
No, she's growing. She's putting on weight. You know, I gave her so much breast milk that I can be proud of. She's still having formula. She's doing grand.
Yeah.
You know, like I would have loved to have breastfed and I would encourage people to try it and do it. And it's really hard. Like it's really, mm-hmm. and like having gone to a breastfeeding support group, everybody goes through issues, mm-hmm. but if it doesn't work out for you, who cares? You know, shame. Once your baby is fed, find what works for you.
Totally. And I think that's a really good thing to say. It's whatever works for you. And once your baby is fed, because there's so much conversation and often it can be quite negative and quite like opinionated, I'll say, conversation online around the issue of breastfeeding or formula feeding or whatever. And it's oftentimes like sometimes it is a choice to formula feed and sometimes it's not a choice. And sometimes like in my particular case, I really wanted to breastfeed. I really wanted to try it. And when Liddy was born, her blood sugar was low and they told me that I could either my milk hadn't come in properly either. And they said I could either give her a bottle to feed her, basically to get her sugars up, or she would have to go to the NICU. And I was like,
I'm not sending my baby.
I'm not sending my baby. I delivered during COVID and I was like, the last thing I want is to be in this room alone without my baby. Like I just couldn't even imagine it. So I was like, give her a bottle. If that's what she needs, that's what she needs. And sure, by then, you know, by the time I did go to try and get her to latch, she had gotten used to the bottle and she had gotten used to the flow of the milk. And
she
had no interest in latching then. So it didn't work out for me, like for kind of medical reasons. But like, there have been moments where I felt really, really guilty because I've seen online the response that some people get when they don't breastfeed. But it's whether it's your choice, which is absolutely fine, or whether it isn't your choice, if it's taken out of your hands, formula fed babies are healthy babies and the happy babies. And, you know, they're as hardy as someone who is breastfed in most cases.
Like I can accept the science that breast is best. But that doesn't mean it happens for everybody, you know? I would have signed my soul over to the devil to make it work. And I did that for 10, 11 weeks and it still didn't work for me, you know?
Yeah.
You know, formula is there. You know, science is incredible that they've developed this formula perfectly for babies.
Yeah.
Oh, and we need it. Like, you know, when things don't go wrong, it's there, you know? And some people just don't want to breastfeed. And I can totally understand, you know, why you would choose that as well. Because the first 2 weeks are insane. Like the most craziest thing I have ever experienced, Ashlyn, honestly. So if you say, stop this, you know, my baby needs a bottle, you know, good for you. Right. What works for you?
Yeah.
You know, but I think I suppose what I would say, having kind of gone through the struggles, you know, if you really do want to breastfeed and you're struggling, there are supports out there. Mm-hmm. Persevere. Because like for me in the beginning, I was like, this is not normal. This baby wants to be on my boob like 5-6 times an hour.
Mm.
which apparently is normal, you know. What I regret not doing is going to that breastfeeding support group earlier and meeting the amazing Sarah. Because I think for me in the beginning, I was just trying to recover. I was just trying to figure things out for myself, that I didn't want to leave my house. Right. But had I have gone to meet someone like Sarah, I probably would have only done the triple feeding for 2 or 3 weeks. And then I would have made the decision, you know, whereas I ended up doing it for 10, 11 weeks,
which is crazy. I mean, triple feeding for 11 weeks is, I mean, the dedication you have to, I it's admirable, but it's also, I wish the same. I wish you had spoken to someone like Sarah in before you'd gotten to that stage. That must have been a lot. It's like, it's a lot on you, you know?
What she said to me was, it's taken away from your time with your baby. And I think when she said that to me, it really clicked, because it made me think, oh, actually, you know, I love my baby and I'm so delighted and I'm so happy. But, you know, I really haven't been taking the time to bond with my baby, because all I'm doing is everything's revolving around the breastfeeding, the pumping, the breast milk, the breast milk, the breast milk. Whereas actually, you know, I should be holding my baby close and just cherishing that, those lovely moments, and, you know, just trying to enjoy it. And because I wasn't, it was crap. And I think that's why people were shocked online, because I was like, this is horrific. Yeah. A lot of people thought I had postnatal depression. If I did, I would talk about it quite openly, because I'm very, very open about my mental health, have struggled with my mental health in different parts of my life. But I actually, in this moment of my life, didn't have postnatal depression, can understand how easy it can happen. Mm-hmm. I was just so busy and exhausted from the triple feeding, you know, and I was, I'm not going to say complaining, I was just, I was venting. I was venting to my network on social media. And they came back with love and support and understanding, you know, and I'm just so grateful for all those people online that did message me, and grateful for my friends and my family. Like, I don't know what I would have done without my mom, honestly. Like, my partner as well, is just, he's just, oh, he's incredible. Like, I don't know, how do women do it alone?
I know. Like, I honestly,
toast to all the single mothers out there.
Yes, 100%.
How you do it.
Oh my God, it, like, it really makes you think, doesn't it? And like, makes you so grateful for any support that you do get, because it's so difficult. And like, I genuinely think, like, watching you on social and seeing you be so honest about it and so honest about your situation is going to help, and has helped, I'm sure, so many people, because there's plenty online, as we both know. There's plenty of loved up, isn't this perfect? Look at this gorgeous nursery. Look at these beautiful clothes, my beautiful baby. There's plenty of that online, and I am here for every second of it. I love that. I love seeing a mother thriving and enjoying her baby and getting out and going for walks and meeting up with her friends for coffee. But that's not the way it is for everyone, and that's not the way it was for me. It doesn't sound like it was the way it was for you. So there is a place for stories like ours. Do you know, there is.
Yeah, and like, I know I look semi-decent today, but, you know, prior to mine, I've just been, you know, I've been so honest, and like, I've been in my pajamas every day. Like, I was wearing my pajamas for 12 weeks straight, pretty much. I barely ever got out of my clothes, you know, and you're online and you're seeing all these perfectly put together people after having a baby, and you're thinking, that's not real. They must have help. Like, I'm just a normal person, you know, that happened to be on TV 12 years ago. I just share because I really enjoy sharing. So I do it with honesty, and I do it with passion. And what I talk about, I talk about because I enjoy talking about it, you know, and I definitely got the sense that people really appreciated that. And I appreciated their responses as well. Because I think we just have to be honest. And like, it's such a life changing chapter in a woman's life, you know, and the average person doesn't have their makeup on week two and are out kind of walking and having coffees with their friends. The average person is in their bathroom crying their eyes out, you know? So, yeah,
absolutely.
So I'm glad that I could sprinkle a bit of realism into people's lives and take people on the journey with me. And, you know, I am aware that I don't share Cherry's image. You know, I obviously censor everything, but I do like sharing mammy content. I never thought I'd be this person, but here I am.
We listen, there's so many changes that happen to a woman or a person, I suppose, after they become a parent. So, but like, I really do. I think from looking at you on social media and like people, anyone who listens to this, you really are like the honesty and the like that transparency and just the putting it all out there and being completely honest about your process and becoming a mother will help and has helped so many people, because there isn't enough of that. Like, you know, there isn't enough of the bare, like, I am on the floor of my bathroom crying and I'm not out for a walk with my gal pals, you know. So I really, really appreciate coming on and chatting to me. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening, and of course to Water Wipes, the number one baby wipe brand in Ireland, for their support. Water Wipes Original are made with just two ingredients, 99.9% water and a drop of fruit extract, and they are plant-based and plastic-free wipes. If you enjoyed this conversation, subscribe, rate, or we would love if you could leave a review. Share this episode across social if you want, and get in touch with this week's guest.